This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting numb, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So with, how many beginners have we got here? Any beginners at all? Okay, one lady, two. Okay, we'll do the, maybe the simplified version, two intellectuals. Okay, so when we look at the experience of meditation within oneself, so what are we actually aiming for? What are the results that we give rise to in the practice? Because essentially, like over time, and as people learn to meditate, and they're meditating for maybe weeks and months on end, what kind of change do we see take place in the mind? You know, both for our emotional, psychological health. And one of the key principles which most people are looking for, and which tends to arise, you know, just gradually in the practice over time, according to one's skill level and personal makeup, is just a level of peacefulness in the mind. So with each person that, some people may be very interested in insight and wisdom. You know, we see that aspect within many traditions. But essentially, when people have peace of mind, that's something that the vast majority of people tend to be quite satisfied with, you know, as a beginner's to intermediate experience. And now, to have that sort of emotional stability, resistance to stress, and the ability to withstand, you know, like the ups and downs of life in a more sort of comfortable fashion. So, you know, being like as a human being, you know, right, our emotions rise and fall on a daily basis, you know, many times, but it's like, you know, the person who can go through different emotions and feelings without essentially being so like blown away or really like affected by this, you know, the stuff that we go through. We have our interpersonal stuff, we have past karma. And as you meditate, that, you know, you're going to become more sensitive, more intuitive over time, and you know you're really going to feel things much more sort of deeper level than you would have had on a, say, in your say pre-meditation lifestyle. Because, you know, meditation, it does make you more sensitive, intuitive, and you feel your human experience much more acutely than you would have if you were just a regular person running around in daily life. You know, that's one thing I can notice if I spend 5 minutes with someone, I can usually sense if they're a person who meditates. They don't have to even tell me whatsoever, but it's something that you can sense. They're not like, meditators are not like mainstream people. There are certain characteristics, certain behaviors which people in that category display. And as we go through our emotional experience, and then we have a ground level experience, a sensitivity to different moods and feelings, mind states, views, opinions that we have within our character, and this brings us to the second half of the practice, where this raw material, this emotional stuff that you go through, if you use it correctly in its raw form, I mean, you have to learn to it's essentially, it's going to teach you to a minimum degree, but you take this emotional experience you have, or even potentially some raw emotions, and then you need to really reflect on and understand them to a very in a very comprehensive manner. It's like, you know, a person becomes their own psychologist, and you know, you just very, very gently, you just explore these emotions, these mind states, and try to understand everything you possibly can about them. Because, you know, within the Buddhist fraternity, we have this very, very, like a very, very core, pivotal teaching, the Four Noble Truths, which is at its most profound level with the human experiences, say unsatisfactoriness. But that unsatisfactoriness is only called that in comparison to the ultimate, the most sublime, deep, supreme state of happiness that a human being can experience. So, but the vast majority of us, you know, we with the happiness, the joy, the satisfaction, and then the sorrow, and the loss, or, you know, all the other the full range of human emotions on both ends of the scale. They can't compare with this very transcendental principle, this ultimate principle. But, you know, the vast majority of us, we tend to orientate towards happiness, joy, satisfaction, contentment, and naturally the monastics do as well. But it's just this whole thing with change, the way things change over time, over one's lifetime, and how it can't essentially completely fill you up and completely satisfy you in every possible way. And but, you know, we do our best as human beings. You know, I don't. I do a lot of reflection on the changeability of experience, the changeability of phenomena. It's far better to focus on that than, say, the negativities, the drawbacks of experience. It's far more useful and far more productive and creative and essentially rewarding in a sense to focus on that which is positive, joyful, to focus on those practices which give rise to positive human emotion, because it doesn't, you know, to think about all the bad things in life and all the corrupt things that the politicians do and how sneaky and how dodgy they are and you know, like how many drug addicts are running around in our local community and this kind of stuff. I mean, our car broke down there a couple of days ago, and two doors up there was a drug house, you know. So we were sort of sitting not far from the drug house, and as the young couple came out in the car, and as they drove away, and the young guy sort of I could see the lady's eyes, his girlfriend's eyes, and I knew there was something up. And then the young guy shouts out, he said, "What are you up to, mate?" And as they were driving past, I think, but they didn't bother stopping to see if we needed help in our car. They just drove off. Maybe they're doing drug deals or something. They were in a hurry to go somewhere. But so instead of, you know, you can choose to think about, you know, all the bad things in life or all the good things in life. So it's much more effective to look at all the good things in one. So this is a point that I have to bring up. This is a practice which is very, very useful to all of you, and we'll do this one tonight and then we'll move to the breath. But it's a matter of reflecting on the goodness in oneself, all the good qualities within your own character, your nature, and then all the good things that you've done for your family, you know, your friends, relatives, and people, say, in the local community. Because all meditators, they tend to be sensitive people, and they have their ups and downs in life. Maybe they will feel more intensely than the average person, depending on that the individual's makeup. But this practice is very useful in the sense that it uplifts the mind. It gives rise to a degree of energy and joy. And you'll find you only have to do this for like several minutes, 5 minutes a day, and then you'll start to see how useful it is. I never did this practice to any great degree over time, but it made such an impact on me just in a couple of days that I'll deliberately keep this one going. Because even when you're just with people, the real, like, genuine happiness and joy, and the laughs and laughing and joking but the energy seems to be much more than I've seen with any amount of hours, thousands of hours of say loving kindness over the years, over what, 24 years or so. But that mudita, rejoicing in the goodness of oneself and what one has done for the people around you, is not to be underestimated. I would say that I'd actually say I get more happiness. I've seen more happiness arise from that sympathetic joy than I ever saw from the loving kindness meditation. And but it's very good for for self esteem and self confidence, actually feeling good about oneself. Because some people, when you chit chat with people in the monastery, you're well aware. Just some people are struggling, or money's really tight, or jobs are hard to come by, and cost of living is very expensive, all this kind of thing. So life's not particularly a breeze, but this kind of meditation is very useful with that kind of experience, where you need to like uplift oneself and lift one's spirits when life might be a little bit of a struggle for some people. When you reflect back 20, 30 years ago, life was much easier for most people, say financially, socially, in broad terms. So what we'll do is we'll spend at least nothing less than several minutes. We'll just exhaust it. Just see how people go. At least nothing less than 3 to 5 minutes, and then watch the qualities of the mind, watch the energy level in the mind, and your the way you feel about oneself and one's life. And so what we'll do to start with, or do to start with, is I want you to, so beginners, the beginners instruction to sit comfortably with your back straight, put the hands in the lap, and when your ankles are crossed, your ankles are touching, it helps to draw energy in towards the center. So what we've, and yeah, just make sure you can breathe fully into the chest, make sure there's nothing tight around the waist, the neck, the wrists, so you're quite physically comfortable. And what I want you to do now is look at all the good qualities, all the good characteristics that you see within yourself. So it could be something like, you know, it could be, say, like you could be a kind, you know, like I am. You say, like, I am a kind. Yeah, you're talking to oneself. I'm a kind, friendly person. I have a sense of say friendliness and compassion for others. I'm trustworthy. Say a trustworthy, loyal friend, you know, to the people who know me. I am, say, industrious. Could be industrious. You know, reasonably hardworking, not lazy, and yeah. Well, so this is the kind of format. So you describe to oneself all the good qualities, and you keep going until you can't think of anything else that you can imagine. And so that will probably take you at least, even nothing less than, say, 1.5, say, 2 minutes. And so we'll keep, you would see, maybe you said like two, say roughly about 2.5 minutes, because you really want to see the effectiveness of this kind of practice. And so we'll all, you know, we'll look within oneself for 2.5 minutes, and then focusing externally for 2.5 minutes on all the good things that you've done for family, friends, and relatives, and the general at work, you know, your workplace, the general community, and then right through the course of one's life, everything you can possibly think of, all the goodness that you have performed in one's life. So for the next 2.5 minutes, start with oneself and just keep going. Even if you exhaust the potential, or exhaust all those things after 60 seconds, just slowly, just keep, you know, just go back over the material, and then look at the level of say mental energy, and the, you know, the emotional heart, you know, how you feel within oneself. So just do that silently in the mind for the next 2.5 minutes. externally. So now I want you to reflect on all the good things you've done in your life for family, friends and relatives, the people you work with, and the people in the general community, and anyone else that you know or have, you know, say been in connection with anywhere in the world. You could have even, you know, could have been volunteering in maybe one of the African states, or gone to Israel to work on a kibbutz, or could be anything whatsoever. You know, some good act, wholesome action that you have undertook anywhere whatsoever in the world for the next 2.5 minutes. Now we will move across to the breathing, coming in and out of the body. And so what I want you to do is, this is still quite a good focus, but it's something you can follow without great difficulty, is to focus on the mouth section. Focus on the feelings around the mouth, and you'll feel the breathing on the edge. But because it's fairly clear, you've got so many nerve endings around the mouth, tongue, when you focus on that area, you can follow it fairly closely. And So as you breathe, as you breathe in and out, just focus on those feelings for the remainder of the session. if you're a bit tired or lethargic, take four deep breaths right into the base of the abdomen to increase your alertness. as you develop the meditation in the beginning stages, you just keep bringing one's attention back to the breathing, and then eventually I'll add something later. Thank you. you find you're still thinking excessively about different people, places, different matters and whatnot, just take one at a time. The most prominent feeling or experience, just try to understand everything about it, about that feeling, that person, that event. Try to understand everything about it, because the more you do, the more knowledge, the more understanding you have of emotions, of mind states, that these things, the energy, the forcefulness of these states tends to drop consistently as you investigate them. If a mind state is not understood, its tendency is to keep persisting over time. It keeps knocking at the door of the mind. You know, if you don't open the door and address the person who's knocking, for what reason, where they come from, you know, and why these experiences essentially will not stop. So it's actually part of your responsibility to develop insight into these things. So whatever is captivating your attention, making, say, obstructing the mind, making the mind unsteady, unpeaceful, invest it thoroughly to the best of your ability, because this is the like a key principle to developing good the very, very peaceful meditation of it over time. You know, the level of peacefulness will be reflected by the level of wisdom that you develop, the level of insight. We're coming towards the end of the meditation, so just reflect back and see if you can see any change in the peacefulness of the mind. I'll ring the gong 3 times. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Any questions on the meditation at all? At the back, yep.
Would you say if memories or things pop up in your mind to spend time on it? Yes, before,
yeah, try.
Someone said not to spend time on it, to go back to your breathing.
Yeah, just in the beginning, I mean, with all of this, you just keep your attention on the breathing, but easily after maybe 5, you know, I mean, this is what I do. 5 minutes. Depends on your makeup. Some people don't like to think too much, but if you've got memories and that and this and that coming up, and you feel it's not really that peaceful, you have to investigate, because if you don't, the memories and the thoughts and the feelings and all the mind experience, all this stuff, essentially won't stop. Because if you have like different bits, you know, different things coming up in the mind, and we don't really understand exactly what's happening, I mean, it takes time. You get better as you explore these things and investigate, develop insight. People tend to get sharper and sharper as the weeks go by, and you don't really have any choice, because you just get blocked again and again and again and again. There's always something coming up. There's always some attachment, some experience. You know, it can go. It doesn't even have to be in the last 5 years. It could be something from, you know, when you're a teenager, when you're a child. And so, when you reflect on these things, you know, try to understand everything about it. When you watch it, you actually watch the experience. As you're investigating the tendencies, it tends to drop away over time. It's not going to disappear. You know, just after if I reflect on something, it may settle down, but it doesn't mean, you know, it's gone for good. You know, it can easily come up, again and again over 20 years, 30 years. But what you're doing, you're looking at past karma, you're looking at the power of past karma. So between people, between, you know, location, life experience, this and that. But your responsibility is not just to. So you have the two sides of the practice, getting the peacefulness meditation. But then, if you can't get peaceful, if you're sitting for 30 minutes, I wouldn't even wait that long. If I don't see any peace at all in 5 minutes, I just start investigating straight away. Some people don't like to think too much, but just feel it out. You know, with some people, maybe after 10 minutes or so, they may feel the meditation's not satisfactory, so they start investigating, because the wisdom practice will always, always, almost in every single case, have at least 2 to 2.5 times more power to tranquilize the mind than just returning your attention to the breath over and over and over again, 1,000 times, 5,000 times. Isn't it? You know, the thing is that the bottom line is, if you were able to stop thinking, if you're able to let go of all this stuff and you're able to stop thinking, you will just automatically go, with very, very little effort, just into deep, deep, deep meditation. You know, the levels of meditation that would essentially get you aligned. So when you can stop thinking, when you can let go of these thoughts, memories, feelings, etc., you automatically just dropped into very, very deep states of samadhi or tranquility. As I've mentioned before, many, you know, quite a number of times, the level of mental effort that you use now to keep your attention on the breath may be something like absolute minimum, at least three to four times more force than you need to get into really, really deep meditation. The whole thing with really deep samadhi, deep tranquility. So, you know, no matter who you are, your upbringing, this and that, how bright or how average you are, everyone's got enough mental energy, enough, say, quality of attention to go into very deep meditation. But the sticking point is the thinking. It's not how much you can concentrate. That's completely irrelevant. The bottom line, the sticking point, is how much you think. You know, and so that's why I always put emphasis on this all the time. You know, you'll see it straight away. Once you really start to sharpen your ability, you may be able to settle the mind even in 30 minutes. To quite a significant level, you know, you may feel that meditation is quite very, I mean, much more than reasonable, is quite good, considering how busy you are during the day, this and that. So if you don't get peaceful 5-10 minutes, you should develop your insight, I mean, straight away, because it's a waste of time. It's like you can just keep returning one's attention to the breath over and over and over again, you know, thousands and thousands of times, but it really doesn't cut the ice. You have to develop your insight to the same level to be really successful over 12 months, you know, 7 years, 5-10 years. That's the difference between someone who gets really, really good success in meditation and someone who's so cruising along and just doing their practice for whatever, 5, 10, 20 minutes. You know, the insight in reality is more important than just keeping your attention on the breath. You can do that for 20, 30, 40 years. You'll only get so far with that. But when you really sharpen, we really, really develop your insight, it will easily take you more than twice, probably 3 times the distance. It's that important. Any enlightened teacher in the West or in Asia will tell you that the insight practice, self-knowledge, self-understanding, is absolutely crucial. You know, you can't get very far without it. You can't get enlightened without it. I mean, in the Zen tradition, where they talk about Satori, you know, that kind of enlightenment, samadhi is quite false. You can fall for that kind of thing. Like, you know, if you get very, very deep samadhi without being instructed, if you don't have an enlightened teacher and you get into that very, very deep samadhi by yourself, you could easily fall for that as an enlightenment experience. But about, you know, for people who've attained, let's say, a genuine enlightenment experience, you know, that could easily affect you for like 3 days, three full days and nights. It's that profound. I mean, not to say that, not to say a full samadhi experience. I mean, you know, people wouldn't forget that. They wouldn't forget that after 15, 20 years. You know, it's still very clear after 20 years. There's no misunderstanding with that kind of thing. But the insight's the key, not just in meditation, but your life in general, your relationships with people and whatnot.
The wisdom practice, you're actually investigating what's stopping you from meditating properly. Is that right?
It's more like say, for example, what thoughts and feelings.
Because
you,
what happens if it's all like silly thoughts, like, I've got to remember to do this, or, you know, things that you've got to plan for tomorrow, and, you know, things that's not really relevant. So how do you investigate those kind of things?
Yeah, well,
I can understand a deep problem, or you've got.
Well, it might be relevant. I mean, for you, but it's more relevant like tomorrow. But the bottom line is, it's your emotions, your feelings, which are going to drive those thought processes. So thinking can get quite complicated, but you have to look at the emotional content, because that's the energy which drives thinking.
Because there's no reason why they're popping; they're just popping in your head.
Yeah, I mean, people, you know, with the nature of the personality, and all the, you know, all these different forces and energies in the personality, as soon as you get maybe a little bit too peaceful, or these things will come up to distract you and disturb you, and you know, like for example, the monastics use this word like the underlying kilesa, you know, in the mind, you know, these things which essentially obstruct the path, defilements of mind. Might sound too strong a word, but it's something that the monastics, we just hear over and over again, especially in the Thai or say any kind of forest tradition, regardless of where you are, because these things are what actually block the path. So if I have any kind of attachment whatsoever, it can be with my family, it could be concern for my parents, if I can't release that, if I can't let that go, the mind will not go to one pointedness. It will not go to unification. So you think it's, I mean, your parents might, you know, it is a very genuine, heartfelt emotion, which is, I mean, really, essentially, it's necessary and it's important to have a sense of care and compassion to watch over one's parents, but you just have to basically train yourself just to drop that thinking process, regardless of whatever it is. It could be a thousand and one things. You have to train yourself to drop that, to let that go, just temporarily.
Mm.
Now you can think about mum and dad later, which is maybe quite necessary. But just while you're sitting, to, you know, it's like yeah,
it
getting
wasn't even a person I was thinking about. It was just a job I need to do tomorrow.
Mm.
You know, so I suppose I just got to let go of them.
Yeah,
this is my meditation time. Tomorrow can wait.
Yeah, exactly right. But it's like you develop the skills, because with each individual, that no one, you, like for example, I can give people tools. Any lay teacher can give the disciples tools to work with, but you have to actually see what works for you. Like I know all the tricks of the many tricks and methods and this and that, with the meditation practice and problem solving and all this kind of stuff, but each individual has to see what works for them, because their character is quite different. Yes, this gentleman here.
Hasan, are you trying to emphasize that better start with insight meditation than samatha meditation, where we need to understand ourselves, our past experiences, childhood, where the problems are, than just merely to try to concentrate on breathing, which may not be successful until we understand ourselves?
Yeah, so what I'll do with a meditation practice, I would start. You can do it both ways, but as an example, you could start with say focusing on the breathing. But my attitude would be after 5 minutes, if the mind doesn't even look like it's starting to simmer, yeah, it's just as busy right from the beginning. I would start investigating. So, and the bottom line is like emotions are the key principle. They're very, very important to success in meditation. So you need to develop this very like feely intuitive kind of approach with the meditation. Because as I mentioned earlier, that your emotions, they're the energy which drive your thinking process, no matter how subtle those feelings are. You could be thinking about some deep philosophical subject or intellectual pursuit or process, but essentially there's a very refined feeling behind that, driving that thought process. So we can be thinking about the things that, you know, we have to do. You know, we have to take the kids to school. We may have to look after one's puppy, tend to the garden. All the things we have to do on a daily basis. So it can be one's regular experience. It can be something incredibly philosophical. But the bottom line is, it's your feelings which drive these things, which are the fuel for these attachments. So with the investigation, just in a nutshell, you need to explore just one thing at a time. So for example, if I've got an attachment to, it could be something happening with the boss at work, there could be some drama or this or that. You need to understand, you talk to yourself, you'd be your own psychologist. You need to understand everything which is going on with that experience, with the boss, with the dynamics, with the staff, this and that. You really explore it like a psychologist. Just very gentle, you know. You don't have to be like ruthless and try to cut it to pieces, but try to explore it very, very gently, in a very relaxed manner, but don't leave any stone unturned, because if you do, you'll have a sticking point. It will stick, you know. The experience will stick, and it won't, you know. You won't go, you know. It will remain with you. It will keep returning and keep like arising in the mind. It's like it's telling you every time, like it keeps knocking at the door of the mind, like, you know, I'm back again, like a salesman, it keeps knocking on your door. You know, if you don't open the door and find out what he wants, you know, what he's trying to sell, or what kind of business he's trying to do, maybe sell life insurance or whatever. You know, if you don't address these things and explore them and talk them over and comprehend them completely, you know, they won't stop. They can be there 20, 30, 40 years, you know. So, and the thing is, karmically, it takes you a long way. Insight is the key, you know, when it comes to spiritual parami and spiritual qualities, the wisdom is the highest principle. So when you focus on that, all the other principles are connected on a lower level. So I wouldn't say lower is on a say, I can't, maybe low might be too choice of words, but I can't think of anything else. But so we have the foundation principles moving up like a pyramid, and inside is at the top of the pyramid formation.
So it mainly applies to the subject matter with which we have a strong sense of attachment or a strong sense of aversion. Like lady previously was talking about just thinking coming about what we are going to do next, like looking after the children, taking them to the school, those sorts of general planning coming into the mind, and which are not really very important, and those simple thoughts maybe can be easily brushed away, and the other strong sense of attachment, aversion.
Yeah, but everything
those thoughts need to be investigated.
everything, just our daily activities and the most incredible philosophical thought that you could have. You have to understand all these things, because sometimes our daily routine may take up more of this, of the meditation time, than all these deep spiritual things. And something, they may have more energy and more force, because one has one's habits. One is doing one's routine on a daily basis. So it may be these things may even be more crucial than reflecting on deep Dharma and could be stuck with the forest masters, this kind of thing. That your daily activities may be more crucial and more relevant to investigate as far as insight than all these incredible, all these other amazing things you could possibly think about. The bottom line is, if the mind's stuck, if it's stuck on something, you have to look at it and reflect.
Can I ask you, John? It's similar to the questions that we're all talking about. See, the emotional bonding or attachment with people around you. I know when you investigate now, I can see this is what it is, I'm stuck. At times, if I'm busy, I don't think, but when I'm sitting on my own and not being with my own self, all these thoughts again and knock my door on the mind.
Mm.
And I felt like, God, how do I make it neutral or being even make it positive? These sort of negative emotions.
Yeah, you can. So, for example, if I had a negative emotion, I would. Say, for example, if I had a negative, perception of someone, I was reflecting on them in a poor manner. Like when you look at the sutta rendering that the Buddha spoke about, that so for example, if I was thinking bad thoughts about someone, which is can be quite painful realistically, so you reflect on all the you do that kind of you replace the thoughts, so I think about like good things. It's a matter of bringing the mind back into balance, like energies, mental energy back into balance. So this is what the Buddha said, if I remember all the different levels. You do things like, so it's all coming to mind. You do loving kindness, compassion, or equanimity. It is possible to do sympathetic joy, and that one didn't come up. It looks like it was missing that particular sutta. But you can rejoice, because you've got to look at the effect. That it doesn't matter so much exactly what the technique is, but if it gets good results, it could be completely outrageous. If it works for you, that's the bottom line. Full Brahma Viharas towards that person. If the mind doesn't settle, then you reflect on the good qualities in that person. And if that doesn't work, then you try to completely ignore the thoughts and the feelings and the experiences of that person. Pay no attention. Or say, for example, in daily life, just imagine you've got someone that is maybe quite difficult at work. They create problems, they're a bit contentious, this and that. If you had a choice, most of us are reasonable people. We like to get along, we like to get along with others if we can. But, this person doesn't want to play ball. They're really difficult. Well, you make an effort with them in different ways and whatnot. The easiest way to connect with anyone, no matter how... they're difficult. They're just a difficult personality. The easiest way to connect with anyone, regardless who it is you just find out what these people are interested in, and then you bring it up in conversation, because that's the stuff they like. This particular subject topic, so you can find it much easier to connect with them, get into conversation. And whatnot, but even then, with this kind of thing, as a baseline. If it doesn't, you know, if you if it doesn't work, the person's antisocial, they won't talk, they won't, you know, connect, you know, this kind of thing. Don't just it might not be so easy, but you just don't spend time with them, don't speak to them. You know, you can say hello, goodbye, you know, this and that, small talk, but don't engage them if you can. It might be difficult if you're working with them, but don't speak to them unless you absolutely have to, because as soon as you speak to them, maybe some kind of contention will come up. So, you know, you don't have to be, you know, like, you don't have to be everyone's friend. It's just, for some people, it's with their background, even with their childhood stuff, you know, some people are not easy to touch base with. And, you know, you make an effort. I mean, all of us are reasonable people. We make an effort with you know, these particular individuals. But, you know, if it doesn't work, you know, just don't spend time with them. Just don't speak to them unless you absolutely have to. But, you know, if this, you know, sitting next to you in the same desk, it might be a bit tricky. Is it all done? All questions are exhausted, maybe.
How does mindfulness fit into meditation? Is it sort of like an aspect of it? It's not like mindfulness is meditation. It's an aspect of meditation, isn't it?
So we look at what does it actually mean? Mindfulness as a description. So mindfulness, say like in a nutshell, is the quality of attention that you give to your experience on a moment-to-moment basis. So we can be mindful of naturally driving the car, doing the garden. Could be like, you know, you could be educating children. At work, you know, everyone knows those life experiences where, you know, you have to pay attention. You've got to keep one's eye, see on the ball type of thing. And so mindfulness, yeah, paying, you know, quality of attention with your personal experience from moment to moment. It could be second to second. But when you're talking about samadhi, or concentration is not the right word. Deep samadhi is about letting go. It's just about just enough attention on the object to take you very, very, very deep, and it's not much. So samadhi is like unified attention. Mindfulness is paying attention in daily life, regardless of whatever it is, whatever activity. And samadhi is that like one pointed fixed attention on, especially on the breathing meditation. It could be on almost anything. Like, you know yourself, the amount of awareness and focus that people who, say like mountain climbers and people who scale cliffs, who do this, I mean, real professional climbing cliffs and you know, banging in pegs and you know, those people are you can call that, that's not just mindfulness, but there's an element of samadhi there as well, because you're really, really focused. Your mind, you know, some people can, their minds could get, you know, they can get like altered states of consciousness. Some people can get altered states of consciousness playing chess. If like you're a chess master, I mean, that's the level of focus that you're talking about, where the energy, the mental energy of the mind is focused like a laser beam on a particular subject or object or experience. So mindfulness can move from object to object to object to object over the course of 60 seconds, but with samadhi you're staying with one experience. So for example, the Burmese Satipatthana method of labeling your experience, you know, like walking, they say, walking, reaching, stretching, holding, retracting, could be drinking, could be drinking a cup of tea. You describe all the processes. You know, that's like very, very, that's very, very sharp mindfulness. And if you do it continually with no spaces between the words, then you're starting to see the samadhi principles start to become activated, come into play, because the five factors for samadhi, for jhana, are applied attention, sustained attention, joy, applied sustained attention, joy, sukha. You can call sukha, say, happiness, really like incredible happiness, not just like I'm feeling happy today. That's like, that would maybe be maybe 1/20th, maybe 1/30th. The greatest happiness you can have, say, in everyday life, that could be maybe 1/20th of that kind of bliss that they talk about with the jhana factors, joy and bliss, and one-pointedness of mind. So, you know, as you understand that, if you get really, really focused on something and you get rapture arising, you get joy arising, it means that the mind is starting to, the jhana factors are coming. That those first three jhana factors apply sustained attention, you're really focused, and then joy, that rapture starts to come up, because your mental energy is starting to really collect, it's starting to build, and when that energy is very, very really starts to collect and unify and build, and the mental energy is like super, super high, and it becomes blissful, and your mind's one pointed at that stage. Yeah.
Well, that's sort of like getting into a deep state of things, but you know, the catchphrase in society lately is, oh, mindfulness, everyone is sort of striving to be mindful of what they're doing. So that sort of, to me, is just like, just be aware of, you know, in the moment and stay in the moment and do what you need to do. Don't be scattering everywhere. But the other deeper stuff is more to do with what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like one object, you're focusing on one object. But that one object, it can be, you know, it can be climbing the side of Mount Everest, because, you know, you're the power of the mind is like, it's really there. You know, all of you are well aware of this, but, you know, those people can't make I mean, mistakes virtually at all, because their lives are on the line.
Mm.
This gentleman in the back. The Swiss man, Swiss, from Switzerland?
Exactly. I have one question from Switzerland. From mountain climbing, I mean, I know that feeling of getting very concentrated when you climb it out the rope, and yeah, there's no room for errors. But it's more like it's brutal force, because if there's fear coming up, it just kicks away.
So say louder then.
It's brutal force. It's just like there's no room for getting
mental, like real mental effort.
Yeah, it's just
physical and mental effort.
Extreme effort of there's no room for getting any fear letting coming up or anything else. Can we do that in meditation, or is that going to lead to
Like in reality, you don't, you know, it's just that the bottom line, in a nutshell, is the level of attention that it takes, the sharpness of mindfulness and focus and samadhi, is just placing one's attention on the object. If you know the object is there, regardless of whatever it is, that's the minimum level of samadhi that you need, and really no more than that. If you just that same thing again, if you put your attention on your little finger just for a second or two, that's all it takes. I say this repeatedly, but it's a crucial point. The only reason why you guys can't get into incredible samadhi is because you think too much. And once you wind that down and that comes to rest, the process into powerful samadhi, it's automatic. Your attention drops down deep, deep, deep into the heart level, into the middle of the chest. That's what they feel. I mean, I had a funny experience the other day. somebody projected a certain feeling at myself when I was looking after the guests, and I felt it right in the middle of my chest at the heart level, and I've never seen that previous. But it could be a karmic thing, but it the level of attention is that same thing. It's the thinking, it's the thinking which is the problem, nothing else. You can be disabled in a wheelchair. I mean, severely disabled, and a person could even be mentally compromised. There could even be mild brain damage. But that person, if you're able to stop thinking, if the thinking process comes to an end, that person could go into incredible samadhi, the samadhi that would get them aligned. And realistically, I'm just not talking off the top of my head. If you've got the ability, regardless of your mental and physical faculties, if you can place your attention on your little finger for several seconds, that's all it takes. But it's the thinking which is the problem, not the mental energy to place attention.
Good expression.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.